This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
A very good morning to everybody. It is Friday, the 15th of March, 2019, 6 a.m. in the morning. As always, we come to you on the airwaves. I'm Khoo Soo Chong, joined by Lin Mark and Sharit Abdullah. How are you, lady and gentlemen?
Good, thank you, Chuang.
Not too bad. Looking forward to the weekend.
Yes, it is. Yes, you are. Yes, we are.
That's
what,
right.
What are we doing this weekend, Lin Mark?
Sleeping.
Really?
Yep.
Are you are you in the words of Arnold Schwarzenegger, exhausted?
I'm not sure if I'm exhausted, but I am looking forward to 12 hours of sleep and nothing else to
do. That's what radio does to you, right? It just exhausts you.
Yeah. Is that like one of those top 10 words that you mispronounce or something?
The Terminator, the Governator. Are you exhausted this weekend? Just continuing the trend of really bad accents in the morning. It's okay. Forgive me, my little foibles.
Oh, but that's great. How about you, John? What's happening with you?
Well, before you, what are you going to do?
I've got some family birthday to celebrate. I mean, some low key ones, nice. Yeah, just some get together. Some rest would be good.
Yeah,
and some sports. You know, just being outdoor.
Bit of squash this weekend then?
No. Football this time.
Football?
I think. Yeah.
How'd you do it, man? I mean, one's knees get a little bit frail towards one's.
You should look at me, man. I look like Arnold Schwarzenegger on the knees. it's all metalled up.
Are you serious? You get all the supporters?
I don't play like I do, like I'm in the 20s. But yeah, I'm all padded up, man.
So you're not doing the Paul Pogba thing. You're just, holding firm in midfield or something.
Yeah.
Right?
Just shout around, get people to get the ball and pass it. just let it go.
Paul's goals.
You're the hype man, basically.
That's right. Okay. Just cheerleading on the field. Yeah.
Well, for me, I don't know. I'm just going to chill out, maybe do a bit of exercise, read a bit, work a bit, sleep a bit, as always, eat a lot.
You both sound so disciplined. Both of you want to do things outdoors, have exercise, and I'm just like, I just want to stay in bed all weekend.
Yeah. You should get out, actually. You'd be surprised. The more tired you feel and the more you counter it with exercise, the better you feel and healthier you are.
I feel like one of those vampires. I see sunlight and I'm like, no, sunlight.
You sound like my wife. So what are you talking about this weekend, in the next half an hour?
Right. So we're going on the ground, just looking. We're talking about people today, I think, a lot. The question is, what's your reaction towards homeless people in Malaysia, right? I mean, if you wander around KL, you're bound to meet them somewhere. They're either on the sidewalk sleeping, or sitting down, or on the, on the seats, public seats. So they're there. So when we see them, do we understand their plight? Do we understand their hardship? So yeah, let's chat about that.
Okay, Nirma.
We also have some news out of Sabah. So the Sabah state government is looking into legalizing stateless children who have one Malaysian parent. So this has spurred a lot of conversation about whether or not we should legalize these kids.
A very empathetic weekend discussion. I talk about how coffee and conversation is combating loneliness in London.
You're very empathetic as well.
Very empathetic. So all that and more in a few minutes, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Fastball with The Way. I'm Chuang, joined by Sharit and Lin Mark, and I've got this little story from the Financial Times, the trove of treasure for all things interesting. Now, this story about a very lonely woman in England. She was pushing a pram around the street, as you do on a Sunday, and she noticed that she was, she was quite isolated. She had a four-month-old child. She was, she was cut off from the adult world. And she noticed that a lot of people were feeling the same way as she did, cut off and a bit lonely. So she set up the Chatty Cafe scheme in 2016, 3 years ago. And she gets cafes to participate. And to participate, the cafe sets aside a table where you can chatter and natter, okay? And these tables are distinguished from the other tables by a little A4 placard on the table, being fully cognizant that British people are very reserved by nature and they don't mix often well. But it was very successful. She's got over 1,000 cafes in England now participating. And it really just goes to show the loneliness epidemic that is, I guess, plaguing the world. And we know this, right? We see it all over the world. I used to work in London, and London is a city of, 15 million people, give or take. And everybody was just enclosed in their own worlds, headphones and newspapers, and nobody really socialized. It's in these big cities that you feel the most lonely. And I think KL is getting there. Because on the MRT, I noticed that nobody talks to each other either.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. I mean, I think I see that. But I was just listening how you introduced the story, especially about this woman with four children.
A 4-month-old child.
Four-month-old child.
Yeah.
And how you mentioned that, you know, how she is feeling lonely in the sense that she is disconnected with, you know, what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of parents probably feel that way, you know. A lot of parents probably in that pursuit of raising their children, you know, they have sacrificed a lot of their time focusing on that. Then they get disconnected with what's going on in the world. And I think in that sense, you tend to lose touch as to what you can talk about with other people because, you know, unless you're with another parent.
Yeah.
They too are very occupied with their own children.
That's right. Mm.
And, you know, they can't, you know, it's not that you can just call, hey, let's get together. So, I can empathize, and you know, and I think that's real. And I think having a cafe like this, where you know everybody has sort of that common mindset, that common shared emotional, would be good. I mean, so there's no expectation. The expectation is very clear. You come in, I want to chat, you know,
and please
don't judge me. I don't know anything
that's going on.
I don't know. It sounds appealing, doesn't it?
It's a real thing.
It's just to make that human connection, right? Because it can be, as you said, with parents as well as the other demographic that they highlighted in this article is caregivers. When you have an ill parent or an ill family member, that can be, you know, it's your entire life. It's 24/7. You don't have that. You don't have the chance to just make a simple connection with someone else. And I feel like this would be a great way to bridge that initial hesitance and reluctance to have a conversation with someone if you feel like you may be rejected. So on a funny note, though, this does not apply weirdly to people who craft. So one of the things that I did
was craft. Knitting and sewing.
Yeah. Okay. So this is something that I noticed while I was in the UK because I got very into knitting while I was there, and I would knit in cafes while I was studying and listening to music. And I had so many conversations with completely random people from all walks of life.
Who would just come up to me and say,
oh, what are you making? Oh, that's amazing. You know, what are you? It's so rare to see. I got this from a lot of old women and old gentlemen
OAPs,
as well.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, oh, it's so rare to see a young person who can knit. It was really nice because then you kind of move to talking about it just segues into talking about life, really.
Mm. Yeah, no, yeah. There are real social and medical implications for this loneliness epidemic. Oftentimes, we hear of adults, yeah, who used to have, you know, fast corporate lives, you know, and they were fully activated, and then the child appears, and then more often than not, the woman is the one who is the primary caregiver, right? And so she gets cut off, and over an extended period of time, there are implications in terms of how the caregiving parents, the caregiving half, wants for that activity, wants for that intellectual stimulation, wants for that social activity, and does not get it. And there's repercussions, often negative, with the other half, the husband. And over a space of time, they can amplify, and they can have repercussions for the family union.
And again, on the caregiving, I think there's a story I want to share. I mean, there was a parent that I used to meet who had a child who is disabled and been caring for them for the longest time, right? So what they normally do is that they pick one day in the week where the couple will go out and have dinner and they cry their hearts out.
Oh, yeah?
They cry
their
hearts out.
Literally, a real story.
But I'm just trying. Yeah, literally. And you know, just talk about how difficult it is, you know, to
no
spend.
Kidding.
Yeah, I mean, it is a big commitment, isn't it? But one thing, moving one step forward with this sort of cafe, it's nice to have a space where people don't judge or, you know, they will give you that space to just cry your hearts out and understand that this place is.
Well, you see the things about. We already have those areas. We've got them in the form of mama stores and coffee
people
shops.
Don't cry, mama store, do they?
No, you don't. But you have that. You have that
questions.
Conviviality, and we see that all over Malaysia, right? You don't really spend a lot of time in coffee shops, do you? But you don't seem the type.
No, but like people won't walk up to you, or maybe I won't. I'm not about to join a stranger's table just to say hi. How are you doing? What do you do with your life? Yeah.
Well, let's ask the people. Is loneliness a thing in your life, and what are you doing to overcome it? Okay? 018-789-8899 is the WhatsApp. And tweet us at BFM Radio, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was The Pains of Being Pure at Heart with Teenager in Love. Great little track. And earlier before that was The Beatles with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Very much in tune with the theme of our morning, which is obviously empathy. Now, this little story as well we've got coming up, coming from The Star actually, The Star Online. Kindness and accountability. Homeless people. Something we don't like to see in cities because, you know, obviously life has been a lot better than it is to these other people. But a reality nonetheless, and in cities all over the world. In fact, some of the richest cities of the world have homeless people on their streets. London, Tokyo, KL, Singapore. Not well, actually, even in Singapore, you know, I've seen homeless people.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's a thing. How are we dealing with this? I don't think we have an elegant way of dealing with this thing.
Well, if we want to go straight there, I think there's possibly some models that we could explore. I mean, okay, on top of my head immediately, soup kitchen.
Yeah.
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 It's a very successful model, in a sense, very sustainable. It's been around for a very long time now. It's been being able to provide, you know, food for the homeless for a number of years. So that means they've got a good business model coming on. You know, funds are flowing freely. So it's just a matter of trying to emulate that model into something else. For an example, you know, providing a place for someone to sleep,
yeah,
and also someone to shower.
The basic fundamental,
you know, in the Maslow theory, just that fundamental security, cleanliness, hygiene, and shelter.
We do have soup kitchens in KL. Off the top of my head, there's the Kachara Soup Kitchen.
That's quite famous.
There's a Bertiwi as well.
Did I hear on radio on BFM a couple of years ago? This young Malay girl, actually, she had a little profitable little social enterprise. I think she had set up two or three soup kitchens by then already. She was only in her early 20s, and she started in university. Then after she graduated, she actually continued with that enterprise. Can't remember her name now.
Profitable?
Malaygal, yeah, with tudong. Yeah.
Don't know. I mean,
profitable in the sense that it was paying for itself.
It's paying for itself. Yeah,
and was giving her a little salary. Mm. Not a lot, but something.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something. But I think one thing to discuss about is our view or our perception over the homeless people, isn't that? Over the homeless community. I mean, when we see them... the expectation, the judgment that we have on them. For an example, why can't you be productive in the society?
No,
why
or can't you do just, something, right? Or rather just the complacency, the way we ignore them. And I mean, I'm guilty of the same thing.
Likewise.
Yeah. Right? And what we don't realize is that, you know, homeless people don't want to be there.
Exactly.
That's the last place they want to be in their situation, right?
Yeah.
But the reality is that being down and out on your luck is easier and more close or less remote than we think.
Mm-hmm.
Bankruptcy laws, for example, are highly impecunious. We know that banking laws and bankruptcy laws are very lopsided in favor of the banks. The banks are very protected, but they don't protect the individual. I think you can be declared a bankrupt with just 25,000 ringgit of debt. And once that happens, they can seize everything. Right?
Mm.
Or if you lose your loved partner, whether through illness or through attrition, you can be down on your luck that way and lose everything that way as well.
So it kind of raises the question. So why do we ignore this? Is it kind of like an instinctive aversion to their situation? Like, you know, because we have this in the back of our heads that actually it's not that far-fetched that one day I might end up like this. Therefore, you don't really want to look at it or acknowledge it.
That's part of it, I guess.
Mm. I mean, not understanding them, perhaps, is another thing. I mean, that brings you immediately to judge because you relate to, you know, some of the your own personal experience. For an example, if you don't work, then you become you're not useful. For an example, if you're not productive and so forth. But people forget that circumstances vary. You know, circumstances can be wide range. For an example, you could be fallen, like I said, bankruptcy, and so many other things. Addiction could come into play, you know, with whether it's by choice or not.
But people
deserve it. Yeah, it's a vicious spiral, and people deserve second chance in some ways. But before we push and judge them, you know, to be more productive in the community, there are some basic things that these people need to be, you know, that needs to be taken care of. Like again, the fundamental stuff, right? Like having shelter and so forth.
Yeah.
Before they can, I mean, let's go back to Sweden. Their UBI, not UBI in terms of potato, but UBI, the universal basic income, right? Mm. I mean, the fundamental idea behind that is that so that they can stop worrying about little things so that they can focus on getting their feet up again, you know?
Yeah. You know, in America, right? America's the richest country in the world. richest by far, biggest GDP, blah, 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 right? There are more people living in SUVs than there are young people with homes nowadays. People living in their own cars. People who have lost their jobs, people who can't afford a home, people who can't even afford to pay rental. And they're living in their vehicles. And there's a lot more of them in the US than we kind of think. And you know this whole this whole wealth gap thing, the haves and the have-nots, it's become a reality in many parts of the world. Tokyo, Japan, America, in the UK. It's coming to Malaysia as well. We can see with our own eyes, right? The kingdom of Bangsa and the gilded cage and ivory towers we see, right? In these areas, the curve and all that. But then there's the little soft underbelly of KL, which we choose to ignore most of the time. They exist.
And they exist right alongside places like Pavilion, you know. Net worth individuals.
You can literally walk out of a Gucci store with 2,000 ringgit handbags, and within 5 minutes, you'll see a homeless person.
Oh, yeah. And that thing where you bargain with people who you shouldn't be bargaining
with. So how do we get constructive about this issue? Should policymakers take a closer look? Should we be more, even at a personal level, be more cognizant? And
I think everyone has a role. Aware? Government has that cash, you know, to at least provide the basic fundamental stuff if they can look into it.
But I do think it definitely has to come from the people, because if the people don't say anything, then the government is not going to take action either.
Okay, well, tell us what you think. Of course, always tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Electric Light Orchestra with Hold On Tight. Love the French little chorus in there. Okay, I'm Chuang, joined by Sharitz Abdullah and Lin Mark. We've had a little bit of an empathetic sharing session early this morning. And time to read some of the feedback that have been coming in on the WhatsApps and tweets. The suggestion, can't see who the person is, but it says Shasha on the little visual on the WhatsApp. This person says that this person runs a monthly social meetup for about 2 years, which this person hosted because this person, him or herself, was feeling out due to his workaholic lifestyle. It's beginning people from all walks of life. From the conversations sometimes had, just to be clear, that the other party actually just wants to have a conversation, just wants to share, just wants to talk to another person. The fear of being a busybody is real. I think this is part of human nature, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We also have a WhatsApp from Ro. So perhaps before the next White Elephant Mall goes up, I think this was referencing a discussion we had a couple of days ago, DBKL can levy a fee from such developers to build a homeless shelter complete with showers, a canteen, basic medical facilities and a job opportunity booth.
Absolutely. And we also have a WhatsApp from TY, who sent us a WhatsApp this morning, feeling that I think our discussion is a bit depressing, I guess, in some way. Too early
for the
talk. But since we're at it, TY is saying that Minister may not be the right department to care for them, he expects that YB will immediately take easy response and, that is family to care for the homeless people, you know, like the children are wandering at night. Now, just interview them in and around Jalan Hang Lek Kew and you will hear their real reason. So, it's all about understanding them. And Tiwa's suggestion is to gather them like how we gather flood victims to their ones and allow them to be fed commonly by charitable organization like Soup Kitchen. And just, since we've spoken about that, better than moving them into homes where they don't like to sleep on beds. I don't know. It's interesting that there is that thought that they don't like to sleep on beds.
Well, I don't know. Obviously, that's debatable. I haven't actually asked that question specifically.
A good night's sleep on the bed.
Paramount importance, right?
Yeah, once a few days a week, then it should be good.
Okay, by Twitter, Born Rebel saying, get them employed. 99, a bit tongue-in-cheek, why don't you take one or two into your house? Open house, love. And I guess, superficially, it's not as tongue-in-cheek as that, but it's a real option. I think in Scandinavia, that's actually being preferred to homeless people.
And I think in the case of what's happening in Venezuela at the moment, where people are getting homeless and they're leaving their country, and Colombia, there's been a lot of stories about how they're opening their homes. Not saying that, we're in that mold, but they're saying that there are examples out there.
I think it's also not as simple as saying, get them a job, get them employed. There is, when you, I guess the, from what you read, there is this mentality when you when you're basically surviving on the streets, right? So it's you're living hand to mouth day to day, and it can be difficult to shift from that into a more kind of what we consider a normal lifestyle. So that is a change that can't happen overnight. You have to give them time.
Yeah, I mean, lest we forget, and we've been having one or two generations of basically relative wealth and relative mm-hmm. peace and prosperity. It's never been, you know, extended periods of wealth and peace have never been the reality for through history, right? Through the annals of time. Don't forget, 3 or 4 generations ago, even 4 or 5 generations ago, Chinese people, Indian people in Malaysia came into Malaysia as migrant workers and we came in as laborers and we were displaced by and large. And sometimes we see these immigrants from Syria or from the Rohingya, from Burma. People like that, don't want to be displaced. They don't want to leave home. Mm-hmm. They don't want to make it in a foreign land, because why would you want to leave home, right? Nobody wants to be in that situation.
Yeah.
You don't choose to be in that situation, but it happens through circumstance, through military war, through conflagrations, through sometimes just circumstance. And we need to be more aware, I think, and to be more constructive about all this. So, yeah, keep those feedbacks coming and tell us what you think about how to deal with this situation, which is becoming ever more real. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, there was the all-sister band Haim with If I Could Change Your Mind. I'm Chuang, joined by Sharit Abdullah and Lynn Mark. Now, the Wall Street Journal, having written this blockbuster about hiring the right person, the right candidate, apparently, even if you're highly qualified for the position and you've got some more alphabets after your name than a can of Heinz soup, it doesn't mean you've got to get a job. And apparently, according to the boffins at the Wall Street Journal, there is a little X factor about the person which gets them hired over the more qualified person. Have you guys come across that situation in your lives? Have you encountered it?
I never have. I can see one of the considerations being like, how well is this person going to fit into the office culture, into
yeah,
the team?
Yes, yes.
But potential is a new one for me. I don't know about you.
Jack Welch of GE used to call runway. Yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? So you're familiar with that word, right? Mm-hmm. Runway. High potential people.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you're right about the culture thing. I think it's one of the things that are listed in this. I mean, one of the sort of definition that this article is trying to, you know, skew what potential is all about. But there's also another line where, you know, he was just saying about how there's some, you know, those who have entrepreneurial drive and also, you know, those who are eager to learn and also desire to help others. I was reading this and then I was trying to relate the result of the SPM. And you know, the SPM result came out and there's some analysis,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Numbers are not, well, for me, when I was looking at it, it doesn't look great. For an example, like almost 37% who are, you know, not doing well, who has failed their papers. Who's not, you know, probably not part of the system. But
then academics aren't everything. Charles.
Exactly. So, I mean, based on this and saying that desire to help others, I mean, there are these individuals where, you know, where if you find that they are productive or passionate about something else, which is not in what is on the piece of paper.
Yeah.
This is something that, you know, for us to sort of horn on, you know.
Yeah, exams and exam papers are not the sole benchmark for one's ability, especially when one is a young person, yeah. Mm. And we've seen that ad infinitum since time immemorial. We've seen people, and I've seen in my career, as I've been working for over 20 years, right, people who did really well in SPM, people did really well in all levels, and, you know, in their degree, they got second class, upper and first class, and then they stayed in the same job for like ages and ages, and they never really went places, they never started businesses, they never really fulfilled their passions. And I'm not saying that with a broad brush or an mm-hmm. overgeneralization, but I'm saying that paper qualifications alone don't prepare you for the real life. And we've seen books about this in bestseller shelves for a long time. There's intelligence quotient, which is IQ, and then there's emotional intelligence, which is EQ, yeah? And people with a high level of both have a greater degree of a chance of success. It's not good to be overly dominated by one area.
Yeah, so and another thing, another aspect about this article is about, when speaking about potential, is also the ability to sort of, you know, what do you call that, to adapt yourself with new environment, you know, being able to zigzag from one place to another, and, you know, being, you know, having that being brave enough to get out of your comfort zone.
Do you remember this guy, Nicholas Nassim Taleb? He wrote a book called Black Swan some years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
It was a big thing because he was saying that black swans are the biggest obstacle to financial market performance. His latter book was all about adaptability, and that's the one characteristic every person must have in the 21st century. Because if you cannot adapt, you will perish, no question. And we've seen industries disrupted in a matter of years because they can't adapt. Same thing with individuals.
I think the
question mark for me with this hiring for potential is that it's very subjective, right? So the thing about paper qualifications is that they've been quantified for you. You have evidence that this person is good at English, is good in mathematics, is good in science. But potential or looking for potential will be solely dependent on the judgment of the hiring manager.
The recruiter.
So it would probably differ from person to person, organization to organization. How do you sustain this?
It's tough. It's an art, isn't it? I mean, to hire someone based on their aptitude and also their character.
Or what their aptitude is going to be.
Exactly. So that's very subjective and relative as
You tap into the gig economy where you don't have full-timers anymore. You just have project people and you can swap and change them as circumstances and project permits. Again, tell us what you think. How do you deal with changing business environments? WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Or tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up is Local Natives with Ceilings, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.